Welcome back to Hertz Ag Talk. I'm your host, Troy Kazire at Hertz Farm Management here in Geneseo, Illinois. And today we've got a return guest with us, Eric Snodgrass, climate scientist with Nutrien. Eric, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on again.
And did I get your title right? What is your actual title there with Nutrien?
Yeah, I got a weird title. My title is Senior Science Fellow, but that doesn't mean a whole lot to some people. So I think you calling me a climate scientist is pretty good. I'm also a meteorologist, an atmospheric scientist. Basically, I study weather and climate and how it relates to production ag. So any of the above is okay with me.
Perfect. Well, yeah, I appreciate you coming. I know we've had you on before and appreciate you coming back. And that's really, with harvest getting started, there's combines running in a few places in the Midwest right now. And so we thought we'd kind of talk a little bit about what we can expect kind of both short and longer term from a weather standpoint and kind of what the outlook was here. So let's just kind of get started with that. You know, we're thinking about temperature and moisture. What's the outlook for as harvest gets rolling over the next few weeks?
Yeah, I think the setup for the next couple of weeks is really going to be in what happened at the end of August and this front half of September, which has been, much of the Midwest has been dry. Yeah, we've had a couple of fronts come through, a couple of decent shots of precipitation. We kind of had our first frost pretty far to the north, like in Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, and the UP of Michigan. But overall, you'd look at much of the Mississippi Basin, and that whole section of the Midwest has got some pretty dry soil in it. Saw the same thing a year ago, right? We were very, very dry there. We watched the Mississippi River lose a lot of water between now and about October 20th of 2022. Well, currently, the Mississippi River down at Memphis is already lower than it was a year ago at this point. And so the question is, are we going to start to get some moisture back into this area? Because we certainly started off the year with drought back in May and June. Then we had a ton of rain in July and early August, and then went right back over to drought conditions to finish this crop up. So I think a lot of folks that are harvesting are kind of just watching those monitors carefully to see what kind of crop they have, given that it was truly a unique year. But, you know, your big question is, what do these next couple of weeks look like? And my answer is the pattern's starting to move a bit. And what I mean by that is we're starting to see the jet stream get into a configuration that's going to help us deliver a bit more moisture. In fact, we're going to watch a pretty big system come out at the end of this week out in the plains. It's going to try to move into the Western Corn Belt. Even before that, got a little rain on I-80 between parts of Iowa and northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin. So it's not bone dry. It's just we need quite a bit more moisture to get those soil moisture levels up. And you know what's funny is I've got some growers that say, "I know, keep it dry. Let me get this crop out of here, then bring in the rain." And at the same time, I got guys saying, "Hey, go ahead and bring in the rain. It's okay. Just don't make it last forever. And I want it so that as soon as I'm done harvesting, I can do fall application." They need that moisture in the soil to get. So, you know, I sit here and I go, "Well, which is it? Well, you know what?" No, but it's the way it is. And the reality is that, fall in the Midwest is generally a drier time period for us. So, we're just going to have to watch it carefully and see how it evolves. Now, before I let you get back into this, one big wild card, because we were kind of chatting before we started here, one big wild card to all of this is the tropical season, right? We're in the second half of it now, and we've not yet had any systems come up the Mississippi. So we could cure a lot of problems in terms of soil moisture if we just get one big hurricane to slowly roll up the Mississippi and dump a bunch of rain. But I don't think anybody wants that big of a rainfall event in such a short amount of time. So that's my setup, I think, as I see it over here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and that's interesting you say that. You know, one thing we haven't seen this year is any kind of course, you know, with some of these diseases, the dry weather has something to do with it as well. But southern rust, and from an insect standpoint, corn earworm, you know, we typically rely on those tropical storms those storm systems to push up through the Gulf to bring that stuff up here. And we just haven't seen any of that in the Midwest to speak of this year.
No, and we would have had pretty favorable conditions for it otherwise, though. So that was the missing component. And you can thank all the heat that was in Texas and Louisiana and Mississippi for preventing that kind of thing from happening. I mean, if you really dial it all back and look at it, we only had two episodes of heat, like in the state of Illinois, where both you and I are. And that was one at the end of July and one at the end of August, right? I mean, we've gotten away from excessive heat in kind of a big way. So that whole story is kind of shaken down to really make 2023 a pretty unique year in terms of growing and maintaining a crop.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now you mentioned, you know, you talked about how we finished things off kind of dry. And as we were, you know, filling a lot of that grain, you know, we got off to a decent start with those rains in July and August, but we kind of finished grain filling without much moisture. And I always get concerned about stalk quality, you know, plants cannibalizing themselves and stalk quality being issues we going into harvest. I mean, do we look like we see any major storm system setting up that could bring excessive moisture or wind and may, you know, cause us to delay harvest and worry about standability?
You know, the time horizon on predicting something like that is probably about 7 to 10 days. And so I see one in the near future. And that first one is going to be coming out of the Rocky Mountains very late this week. I think it's mostly going to be a Western Corn Belt storm system at this point. Not that it can't get farther to the east over here to Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, you know, Wisconsin, that area. But right now it's looking to be a bit more energetic from like Texas to North Dakota, you know, the whole of the plains. And this one could produce some stronger winds. And of course, we don't want to see that this late in the year. But if you say, well, is there anything that's kind of symptomatic of what we might be seeing at the end of August and then getting out, or excuse me, the end of September and getting out there into October? And I will say that I have seen some indications that the subtropical jet stream, that's the one that kind of goes from Hawaii to California and then cuts across the United States, it could be a bit, you know, a bit faster than average. And in the particular situation, we tend to get a pretty active, you know, early fall. So remember, early fall is October. So the early fall setup could be something that delivers a bit more rain at times. But again, we come back to that same question at the beginning. All right, we actually need the water. We just don't want it to come in violently, right? Just bring it in at the right time and we're in good shape. Let's get that soil moisture up. But at the same time, we don't want it to come in with strong straight line winds. Because you're right, I think that you're going to see a lot of crop as it's getting harvested, maybe not have its typical stand quality because of the adversity it saw from this season, mainly due to water resources and their scarcity.
Yeah, absolutely. So now you know, I do subscribe to your morning report there, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. But you know, you have been talking about there's a fairly solid El Nino pattern setting up. Mm-hmm. If you would, why don't you remind us exactly what an El Nino is, and then kind of in general, I know it's tough to know specifically what it's going to do, but in general, what does that mean for a pattern in the Midwest?
Yeah. So El Ninos happen when the trade winds across the Pacific Ocean from like South America over toward Australia, when they're very weak and even sometimes reverse. So what that does is that resets the pressure pattern. Well, actually, the pressure pattern is reset and therefore the winds are reset. And what that does is allows a lot of warm water to start to surface. So you often hear people talk about El Nino by looking at the ocean temperatures. They're actually looking at the result of what El Nino does, which is to change the trade winds. Okay. What this does for us, though, is that it typically allows the Pacific jet stream. That's the one that's to our, you know, that's to our west that comes across the United States. It typically allows that particular piece of the jet stream to carry a bit more momentum. It also tends to split it. Now, let's put all that together and then answer your question. What does that normally mean? We typically have a stronger southern branch. I called it the subtropical branch a few moments ago. And that one goes from Hawaii to California, straight across the south and exits somewhere in South Carolina. Then you have the polar branch that during an El Nino tends to go way up into Alaska and then dive through the Canadian prairie and then meet up somewhere like over Ohio or the Appalachian Mountains before exiting east. So long story short, what it tends to do is if you said, hey, what do all the El Ninos in the past, if you average them, what did they do here in the Midwest? They tended to give us a warmer signal throughout winter. Now, that doesn't mean we don't get cold at points during winter, but when we average those 3 months together, you know, December, January, February, we might find ourselves with a slight warm bias compared to average. Now, remember, that number really doesn't mean anything because you could have big storm systems in the middle there that dump a bunch of snow or cause major ice events or whatever. But that's the first part of it. We tend to be a little bit warmer. Now, the precipitation side is not so easily understood. What we tend to do is we tend to have near normal precipitation, but because it's typically more mild at times, some of it tends to fall more in the form of rain than snow. Now, I like that. I hate it because it's uncomfortable, but I like it because if it's falling as rain, that likely means our soils aren't frozen, which means we can get that water into the soil, which we need for next spring. That's always an important aspect of it. But down south, I do expect major drought reduction from Texas to Louisiana, Mississippi. Those are three states that are deep in drought. And I also expect this to be something that starts to beat back the drought that's in the central United States this year. We currently have about 52% of the land area in the lower 48 in some form of drought. Boy, that's way lower than last year where we were up to 86%, but that's still too much. So overall, we would look at El Nino and smile. We're like, all right, bring it. Let's have it happen this winter, because oftentimes ugly winters mean great springs.
That's good. Certainly welcome news to hear. Now, how long do these El Nino patterns typically stay in place once they get established?
Yeah, so most El Nino events reach a peak in December and January. That's actually how they got their name. El Nino is a reference to Jesus from Peruvian fishermen back in the 1800s. They called it that because the arrival of the warmest waters where they used to fish off of the west coast of South America coincided with Christmas. So they just called the arrival of the warm water and the peak of El Nino, or the peak of that warm water, they called it El Nino. So El Nino references Jesus there. So that's your lesson, right? If it reaches a peak then it typically means it starts to fall off once we get into spring. That's not the case with La Niñas, which are the opposite. They tend to last for a few seasons in a row. El Nino, this one will likely reach a peak maybe early January and begin to fade through spring, but we'll still be talking about its impacts all the way through the start of next summer.
Very, very interesting. So speaking of South America, let's kind of segue there. Obviously a pretty big soybean crop down there. They've been talking about getting ready to plant. Looks like a big portion of the central part of Brazil is pretty dry and needing some moisture. What do you see setting up down in South America?
Yeah, so Brazil's winter dry season, which basically goes like May, June, July, and August, and halfway through September, they can't plant anything during that time period for a couple of reasons, but September 15th, they can go. What they wait on is usually about 2 inches of rain, and right now, all that rain is pretty far west, almost in the highlands, not where they do a lot of agriculture, or it's way down south in like Rio Grande do Sul, which is southern Brazil, where they've had a lot of flooding. So the problem is that they've got the green light to plant, but they don't have the moisture in there. So if they were to go plant, there would be nothing to help that seed germinate. We'd have problems and have to go replant. So they are patiently waiting for a decent shot at rain. And we don't really have much of that forecast for the rest of September. But what's most important about Brazil's planting is the pace they maintain in the month of October. As long as they're done by the time we start November, then they're going to have, they're going to have a better chance at a successful crop. And it then also tends to mean that the Safrina crop goes in on time, at some point in late December through January and February, which is mostly a corn crop. So we add all those things up, and what it says is the start and pace at which they plant is maybe the most critical thing for Brazil's soybean and corn crop at this point. And there's a bit of a delay, partly because of El Nino's influence on other weather patterns that affect South America. So yeah, that's there's going to be an interesting story coming out of Brazil. But typically what happens is if the markets are going to play a late plant, they're not going to really start to play that story out until we get more than halfway through October. So I could talk to them blue in the face about delayed planting, but they won't react until it's about mid-October and then there's an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Something we'll definitely want to be keeping an eye on as we head into fall here. Mm-hmm. I mentioned your morning report. You provide a lot of good references, a daily weather report, kind of a shorter morning report and a more in-depth report each day through the week. Why don't you talk a little bit about that and how folks can access it?
Yeah, the easiest way to access all of this is through my website. It's called agweather.com. That's ag-wx.com. And that's the website I built for Nutrien, and that's the one that we use there, ag-wx.com. When you go there, you can sign up for the report that I write. So every Monday morning, I give a long email report that just goes out with all my favorite maps and analysis. But every morning, I also record kind of an in-depth video that just kind of keeps track of these things. And what I tell folks is I'm going to cover it all. So the videos are, they're not short, but they're in-depth. And, you know, if you only have a few minutes, well, just grab that little slider bar at the bottom of the YouTube video and find the part you want and watch that and get on with your day. You know, it's how it is with weather. I could talk about it till I'm, you know, blue in the face. But the reality is people have a pretty short time span in which they need to make some critical decisions. So use it. It's free, something Nutrien provides for free, and we find it to be a highly consumed aspect of what we do over here. So agweather.com, ag-wx.com.
Yeah, and I would absolutely encourage anyone listening to check that out. I subscribe to that report. A lot of great tools on the website, a lot of great information. Appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, no problem at all. I really enjoy it, so that's good.
Anything else that we're missing, Eric, here that you wanted to make sure we cover?
No, I think you've hit it. You know, if you did a quick trip around the rest of the world, I would just say Australia is concerned about being dry during their spring and summer. Same thing with Indonesia. We did get a big bunch of late rain in India to finish off their monsoon, but it may have been too much late in the season, so it may have caused some problems. China's a wild card. I do not yet fully know the quality and size of their crop in the Manchurian Plain and North China Plain. And as with any winter, just remember something. Even though I said we tend to be more mild with El Ninos, there's so many other factors. Like if we get a polar vortex split, we could just completely, you know, destroy low temperature records, you know, in a matter of minutes if that happens. And that tends to be the thing that people remember most about winters, is the most extreme part of it. So, and you know, you and I living in Illinois, sometimes we have winters where we get nothing all winter, but we get two snowstorms that add up to 24 inches. And there you go. You had your whole winter snow and just a couple of shots there. So it will be key to watch going forward as this winter starts.
Absolutely. Well, Eric, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us again today, and we will we'll look forward to having you back when we start to think about what next year is going to look like.
That sounds good. I'll be ready.
All right. Thanks again, Eric Snodgrass with Nutrien. Thank you, Eric, and thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time on the next episode of Hertz Ag Talk. Thank you.